You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 29 July. We've got the FOMC rate decision tonight, 8:30, expected, no change. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Chantal Marks, FNB Wealth and Investments. We had the Canal Plus results. This is to the end of June. It's got all the Boxer in it. We'll get her thoughts. And then the Boxer updates. Sorry, it's got multi-choice in it. And then Boxer update, food deflation. Sean Kelly from Parity Wealth, Global Fragmentation, what this means for investors and how we should respond. And then we chatting with capital partners at Fed Group, private credit locally, and their funding on a 242 million rand safari lodge. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Southern Sun starts 250 million rand overhaul of its biggest hotel, follows the group securing a multi-decade lease on the properties from Etiquette Municipality. Business Day, Harmony secures 20 billion funding package to drive copper expansion. New funding backs Australian copper assets and sustainability goals as well. Morning markets, US was mixed. We had the S&P up 0.2%, Nasdaq down 1%. Over in the east, it is mostly green. Sydney's up 0.1%. Tokyo's the red, off almost 2%. Hong Kong is almost 1.5% higher. Tencent 4.7% higher. Commodities mixed. Gold futures red at 4,086. Brent red at 87.57. And on the green, the PGMs, platinum 1,606 and palladium 1,263. The rand is 1673, Bitcoin 63,600, and top 40 opening call, green open, 100 points, 0.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. The Canal Plus results, which, if we exclude multi-choice, was up 1.4% like for like. Not a giant number, but of course it's now got multi-choice. They mentioned their June best subscriber acquisition month in South Africa in a decade. I suspect a lot of that was perhaps World Cup, Soccer World Cup. Your thoughts on the numbers and opportunity now that we've got the full acquisition of MultiChoice being digested into Canal Plus?
Well, I was just about to talk about that World Cup and what a boost it's been for MultiChoice, but I suspect for Canal Plus as well. But yeah, I mean, I thought that the results were pretty decent. And considering that they had quite ambitious targets in terms of cost savings and what they wanted to achieve with the combination, I think that this World Cup tailwind might have just been what they needed. And they've executed very well on what they said they were going to do. And I think that's why you saw the share price up that much, because generally these big mergers, these big acquisitions take a while longer than management teams anticipated, and there's always excuses and targets are always being pushed out. But these guys are delivering on time, and this on a stock that is very, very cheap. So market rewarding them for that, and I think perhaps the start of something more if they can keep subscribers.
And I take your point. And I mean, certainly the synergies, every merger talks about synergies. The wild stuff is we're seeing it happening here. If they can keep subscribers, because of course it is it's YouTube, it's Disney, it's Netflix. It is a competitive space that they operate in, and not easy. And a lot of that is going to be they've got to create content.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing is the sports angle, which I think is a major competitive advantage, particularly in the multi-choice universe. And then the second story, as you mentioned, local content. People want to watch stories featuring people and stories that are familiar to them. Mm. So it's very important for Canal Plus to continue investing in French content, which they have said that they are going to do, and they've made a new fresh commitment to that, and for MultiChoice to continue to invest in African stories. So I think as long as they do that, they have a competitive advantage. One thing that I would love for them to do, and maybe it's just my personal opinion, I would love for a better the SDV Now platform. I think that we can do better on that front. And perhaps also some of the lost content from this merger, from other mergers and acquisitions that have taken place, you can also start reintegrating and really keep your audience captured.
Yeah. And I take a point around the actual DStv platform. Maybe they've got the tech, they can fix that. Now let's quickly change track. We had Boxer. This was just an update for them. Top story, there was slowing momentum in a highly constrained trading environment and price deflation, which of course you, I, and the listener love. But for them, deflation's a problem because none of their other costs are going down, but they're getting a little less revenue. Thoughts on Boxer? Market it down a little bit. It wasn't a particularly big move in either ways.
Yeah, I think this was always going to be a pretty challenging period for retail locally. Yeah. And I think for Boxer, because of this price deflation story, it would have hit more. Because if you look at the compilation of the basket of goods that they offer, a big part of that will be areas or products that are vulnerable to price deflation. So maize meal, rice, flour, and the rest of it. And that's really what drove that deflationary number. Importantly, though, like-for-like volume growth was positive. They continue to gain market share. They're continuing to expand, and the expansion is weighted to the second half. So I'm still cautiously optimistic here. I think this is one of those stocks that you can back right now. Mm-hmm. And you're probably getting it at a bit of a discount. I mean, I had a quick look at the forward PE this morning. It's still just above 18 times, but it's as low as it has been since the listing. So, perhaps an opportunity more than an issue, yeah.
Yeah, and an IPO that's actually done well compared to some of the other IPOs, which are underwater. This one, you're sitting nicely in profit. We'll leave it there. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Sean Kelly, Parity Wealth. Sean, always appreciate the time. You sent a message through recently talking around global fragmentation happening in markets. I suppose first question, when you say global fragmentation, what does this actually mean for investors? What are you seeing out there in global markets?
Morning, Simon. Always great to be on. I think there's two things happening when I say that. I think if you look, for the last three decades, companies have built their supply chains around one question: what is cheapest? Mm. And now I think there's this second question being asked, which is what is secure? And we've seen this now with the evidence is clear. The average US tariff entered last year 2.4%, as we saw, reached 28% in April, and now it sits near 11%. And similarly, the UN's trade body now estimates that there have been 100 new restrictions on critical mineral exports since 2020. So for investors, the issue is now, what does this all cost? Duplicating supply chains, securing minerals, and expanding electricity grids is enormously capital intensive. But it also broadens the AI story. American tech companies remain important, but I think governments now treat chips, energy, and minerals as strategic assets. And as we know, AI needs power, it needs grids, it needs copper to run off. So the question is shifting from who owns the tech to who supplies it. And that is the second development in our view, is this market broadening. Leadership is beginning to move beyond a handful of US tech companies that dominated the last decade. And we've seen this play out in the first half of this year. We've seen the emerging markets now have returned around 24%, small caps 23%. And so in our view, we're not saying globalization is dead, but what we are saying, it has become more expensive and hired a compliance team with it.
Yeah.
And so we know the money, yeah.
I mean, you make the point. I mean, and Mag 7, I mean, you know, I've chatted a bunch around Mag 7. And to your point, Mag 7's not having a brilliant 2026. They're not crashing. They're not going out of business. But they're not doing brilliant. So in this sense, I mean, where are opportunities coming from this? Because as an investor, I 100% agree with what you're talking. And this is, you know, we can see it clearly over the last five, 6 or so years. Where's the opportunity from this broadening that we're seeing in the market?
Yeah, and this is the question. We know the money will be spent, but I think the work for investors is deciding who gets paid. What we've seen is a couple of opportunities. I think the first that comes to mind is on the emerging markets, and it's all down to valuations. It's trading at around 11.7 times forward earnings. You know, compare that to 21 times of the MSCI US, but that discount is part of the case. But the opportunity beneath it, I think, is highly differentiated. We see the EM mainly as three separate trades. You got North Asia as a semiconductor cycle, India's domestic consumption and investment story, while Latin America is commodities, currencies, and rates. I think Europe has some good valuations, relatively cheap. It's trading around 15 times forward earnings compared to 19.2 of the MSCI World. But I would say we don't view Europe primarily as a growth story. Mm-hmm. Rather, we see it as a policy-backed capital expenditure opportunity. You know, you've got the U.S. readiness plan and separately NATO members committing 5% of GDP spend. U.S. small caps, I think, also shows this broadening theme that's up around 23% for the first half of this year. And lastly, we have to mention that gold and defense is probably the most direct beneficiaries of the fragmentation. Global military expenditure has increased to around $2.9 trillion at the end of last year. So the structural shift is real. And I think these are the opportunities, albeit with volatility.
So for an investor and positioning their portfolio, is this, you know, again, to the point, we're not abandoning big tech, we're not abandoning the US, etc., but this is sort of positioning ourselves in some of these. I mean, EMs, there's lots of opportunities. We are, of course, an EM, but perhaps not one of the exciting ones out there. You mentioned gold, you mentioned small caps, Russell 2000, sort of those sort of positions to catch the waves.
Yeah, absolutely, Simon. I think you're spot on. And I think specifically for South African investors, it's important to perhaps start with looking at what you already own. A South African investor probably has, as you say, substantial exposure to gold, platinum group metals, resources. And as we know, if you own Naspers, it almost acts as a proxy for Chinese tech. So yeah. I don't think simply adding global commodities funds or a global gold ETF will increase or decrease your concentration, or probably increase your concentration. And the same logic applies if you hold offshore funds. We know 64% of a global equity index is invested in the US, and almost a quarter of that would probably sit in just 10 companies. So I think the biggest mistake is we often replace one concentration with another, and diversification is not owning the same trade in three different products. For investors, we need to stay properly diversified and ensure that the portfolio is positioned to benefit as market leadership broadens.
I like that. I take that point, absolutely. And it's understanding, I think, oftentimes what we actually do hold and what's in it. Not always what it says in the sticker, but we'll leave it there. That's Sean Kelly. You find him, of course, at Parity Wealth. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. A poll this morning on LinkedIn is on just this point. Are you positioning your portfolio to catch the trend? I mean, Sean makes a great point. And to be clear, I mean, you know, we're 5 or 6 years in, but this is not going away. This is going to be, I suspect, probably for much of our investment lifetime going forward. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Jason Green, private capital partner at Fed Group. Jason, appreciate the time. You've just provided a 242 million rand structured finance facility. This is for the completion of the Vakhela Safari Lodge. This is part of the broader Club Med development down in KZN. Talk us through the deal in particular and how Fed Group got involved.
Right, so Simon, thanks for your time. I love you to speak. Our solution on the Vakhela Lodge is one that came off a recent history with the Collins team. As you know, a 260-bed luxury safari lodge in Pilo Nature Reserve, northern KZN. It's a safari leg of the new Club Med offering, pairing sort of the beach offering with this Big Five experience in one trip. Right, so it's a 4.5-hour drive or a short flight to the Pilo Nature Reserve, 18,000 hectares sort of near Pongola. And yeah, I mean, this is within our broader sort of alternative investments, asset management platform, Fed Group. We sort of run property, agriculture, renewables, and structured specialized finance solutions in the private credit type space. Mm-hmm. And this sits sort of firmly in our property game. Right, so a number of pieces came together on what was a complex project. You know, we've had the benefit of understanding the Collins and Sinceris business over sort of recent years, a large solution that we put together for them on their Seton and Lalela estates in northern KZN. And that sort of look through, you know, gives us the confidence to look through the risk curve, right, with confidence.
Yeah.
It's a high quality product, you know, strong backing, bookings, sales momentum, and executed by highly credible clients, an operator with experience in this particular asset class. So, you know, those are the sorts of conditions where we thrive and we're able to put together the right structured solution with a lot of conviction.
I was going to say, this is a sort of an evolution. We're seeing it globally, but we're obviously also seeing it in South Africa. A sort of changing face of development finance landscape. We're bringing in sort of specialist partners such as yourselves. Banks aren't becoming obsolete, but it's becoming more nuanced and perhaps more specialized in some places.
Certainly, right? I mean, it's complementary, our solutions alongside the traditional sort of institutions and DFIs, mm-hmm. right? And this is the role of private capital. It's taking projects sort of through that risk curve, you know, solving challenges that enable our clients to sort of seize opportunity, right? And again, it's on the back of a very good understanding of the Collins and Sinceris businesses, a recent structured facility on their Seton and the Lelo estates, which again helped us sort of client to execute on an excellent product offering, you know, against strong sales momentum and a development that is becoming rather a large precinct. Our solution there, in excess of being sort of, you know, kind of 1 billion rand, you know, supported that full spectrum from infrastructure spend, you know, including the end-to on-ramp, off-ramp, through to top structure and civils on sites, and even through to a new school offering called Seton House, which opens its doors in 2027. And again, that look through, that understanding of a client with an excellent track record, strong tailwinds, those are conditions in which private capital can be catalytic. But can support, you know, taking projects through various phases to bankability or even sort of thereafter.
Are banks just not nimble enough? Are the banks just don't have the appetite for it? Or is it just a case of, you know, lending is just becoming a much wider market and much more players involved in the space, such as yourselves? I mean, Fed Group's not a small operation by any stretch, easily 20 plus billion.
Yeah, sure. So, look, I mean, the private credit sort of story globally is a, you know, it's often sort of painted with a single brush, but we play in the asset-backed lending type space.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and private credit, if you look over sort of overseas in the US, you hear noises around double-pledged collateral and technology stocks, and that's not where we lend. We lend against assets that we can understand and with partners with whom we can, you know, build a real relationship and get to grips with. So, you know, for us, private credit is complementary alongside the banks. The banks are still the cornerstone of funding and development sort of finance within South Africa and globally. And again, we play a role in taking projects when the conditions aren't necessarily right for sort of bank debt at that stage, or where there are time pressures or the need to provide sort of a structured solution that doesn't work on a bank's balance sheets for that sort of moment in time. Of course, you know, that means that we typically play a role for a certain duration in the life cycle of an investment. And happily, you know, that's our sweet spot. And that's where we kind of take our clients again through that risk curve, helping them to seize the opportunity.
And that's very much it. It's niche in the sense that you know what you want to do, how you want to do it, even to the point that you say you like working with certain developers. You've got, you know, experience working with Collins and, of course, they with you. And it really is you're able to operate and to thrive within a niche that maybe wouldn't have been viable a decade or two ago.
Certainly. And you know, our capital is also, it's not a everything to everyone.
Yeah. Right?
You know, we understand that we play in a very particular sort of niche segment and that we're appropriate at certain times. And this happened to be the right time, the right place with the right clients. And that's where, you know, our funding and our solutions are relevant.
Yeah, no, I like that point. It is situation specific and right client, right places is often going to be the point. We leave it there. It's Jason Green, a private capital partner, Fed Group. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. Yesterday, I was chatting with Donnie Dorfling. He, of course, from Moore Infinity. We're talking around the Vodacom update. They did reduce the dividend payout ratio. He made the point that not necessarily reducing the dividend, because, of course, if earnings goes up, the dividend goes up just by a slower amount. But we asked you what you thought of the update. Around 40% said, no, man, where's your dividend? Third said modest at best. Rest said looking good. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokhle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. $3 billion private credit fund.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.